Welcome to this edition of Back to Basics with Pastor Brian Broderson.
We see through Jesus that God is merciful and gracious, slow to anger, and full of compassion. That's God's self-revelation. That's what we see in the incarnation. Jesus comes and he completely blows everybody's minds because he is merciful and gracious.
Today on Back to Basics, Pastor Brian continues his study in the Gospel of John. Join us as Pastor Brian begins his teaching on John chapter 18, verse 28 through chapter 19, verse 16, in a message titled, Jesus and the Truth. Now, here's Pastor Brian.
So we come now, as we've seen, we come now to Jesus standing before Pontius Pilate. In our last time together, we looked at the trial of Jesus with the high priest. We talked about how there were two high priests. There was Annas and Caiaphas. And John tells us about what happened between Jesus and Annas. He doesn't say anything about what transpired with Caiaphas. John skips over that, and now he moves to Jesus before Pilate. So verses 28 and 29, the Jewish leaders took Jesus from Caiaphas to the palace of the Roman governor. By now it was early morning, and to avoid ceremonial uncleanness, they did not enter the palace because they wanted to be able to eat the Passover. Just a quick point. This, it just shows you how detached from reality these guys were and how compartmentalized everything, you know, in their mental process was. This is the craziness of people in sin. They can just compartmentalize all of this. So they're so concerned that they would be defiled by going into the house of a Gentile. That's what the issue was here. Pilate was a Gentile. But look in verses 31 and 32, because it's really interesting what it says. So, you know, they bring Jesus. They came and Pilate says, you know, what charges are you bringing against this man? They say, you know, if he were not a criminal, we would not have handed him over to you. Now, just a quick side note. The Jewish leaders and Pilate, they hated each other. They were absolutely hostile toward one another. Pilate, you know, most of the provincial Roman leaders, the governors, you know, the idea was that you go into a community, wherever it was, and you try to work with the people and you try to have a peaceful thing. Pilate just did not do that at all. He went out of his way to provoke the Jewish leaders. And some suggest that he had even been reprimanded by Rome for this. So they're coming to this man, Pilate, who they absolutely hate, but they need him for this reason. So they said, if he weren't a criminal, we wouldn't have handed him over to you. Pilate said, take him yourselves and judge him by your own law, but we have no right to execute anyone, they objected. This took place, so this is the key. This took place to fulfill what Jesus had said about the kind of death he was going to die. Now, here's another thing I want us to see, just about the corruption of these leaders. It's debatable among scholars as to whether the Jews could exercise the death penalty, capital punishment. Some people say they couldn't, some people say they could. The text implies that they couldn't, but it seems like it was to a certain degree. It seems like they could exercise it in regard to stoning a person. And we see that in Scripture. We see that Stephen was stoned by the permission of this same group of people. But here's what they could not do. They could not crucify someone. And of course, crucifixion was Rome's way of dealing with someone. But they are coming, and they don't even want to stone Jesus, although they've attempted to do that on a couple of occasions already. They want him crucified. And if you think about that, just in the sense that, you know, the Jews collectively, generally, of course, they hated the Romans. The Romans were the oppressors. So Jesus is prophesying that he's going to be crucified. The Jews have no power to crucify him, but they want him crucified. So here's the question. Why did the high priest want him crucified? Why not just permission to take him out and stone him? And this is the reason. The law had said, cursed is anyone who hangs on a tree. And the high priest wanted to show publicly that Jesus was cursed by God. He was not the Messiah of God. He was not the Savior that he was claiming to be. No, he was under God's curse. That was their motive for seeking crucifixion. It's unbelievable, really, when you think of the whole psychology and everything that's going on at this moment. Now, in verse 36, just look there with me real quickly. So, you know, Pilate asked Jesus in verse 33, are you the king of the Jews? Jesus says, is this your idea? Or did others talk to you about me? Pilate says, am I a Jew? You know, Pilate's, he's being sarcastic here. He says, your own people and the chief priest handed you over to me. What have you done? And Jesus said, my kingdom is not of this world. If it were, my servants would fight to prevent my arrest by the Jewish leaders, but now my kingdom is from another place. So he takes Jesus, as we read here in chapter 19, he took Jesus and he had him flogged. The soldiers twisted together a crown of thorns and put it on his head. They clothed him in a purple robe and went up to him again and again, saying, hail, King of the Jews, and they slapped him in the face. And so Pilate then came out to them again, and he said to them, look, I'm bringing him out to you to let you know that I find no basis for a charge against him. And verse 5, when Jesus came out wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe, Pilate said to them, here is the man, or behold the man. Now, people wonder, what was Pilate trying to do here? Some think Pilate was trying to elicit some compassion. Look at this poor man here. Look at what, you know, he's been beaten. He's crowned with these thorns. He's been mocked, all of this. You know, can you have a little bit of compassion? Can this be enough? Some people think that Pilate is saying that. Other people think that Pilate is, by bringing Jesus out in this, you know, dressed as a king by the Romans, that he's making a mockery of their accusation against Jesus. This is your king? You're trying to tell me that this guy right here is raising an insurrection against Rome, that I should be concerned about this person, that he might in some way, shape, or form rise up against Caesar? And so in that sense, Pilate is just dismissing this as absurd. We don't know exactly what Pilate was thinking. But they did have him a bit over a barrel. And we see in verse 12 of chapter 19, Pilate was trying to set Jesus free. He's trying to set Jesus free because he knows that this is just politics. These guys are envious of Jesus. He knew that. Again, he had no sympathy for them whatsoever. But I want to come back to verse 37. And I want us to focus here for just the last portion of our time here. I want us to focus on verse 37. So Jesus answered Pilate. Pilate says, you are a king then? Jesus answered, you say that I am a king. In fact, the reason I was born and came into the world is to testify to the truth. Everyone on the side of truth listens to me. So Jesus says that he has come into the world. Now, notice Jesus says two things. He says, for this reason, I was born, the incarnation, and I have come into the world. There's a little bit of a hint there that Jesus came from somewhere else into the world. Nobody else comes from somewhere else into the world. We all just come into the world. We don't have a pre-existence, right? None of us pre-existed. But Jesus did. He pre-existed. And so he came into the world. The king, he stepped down from his throne. And that's what Jesus is just inferring a bit here. For this reason I was born, and for this I came into the world to testify to the truth. To testify to the truth. And then Pilate, you know, cynically says, what is truth? So when Jesus says, I came to testify to the truth, what does Jesus mean by that? Well, I think we have to understand it, that he has come to testify to a very specific truth. Now, he's not come to testify about mathematics or logic or even philosophy, which those are all fine, and obviously there are truths to be understood through those lenses. But Jesus is not talking about truth in a general sense here. He's talking about truth very specifically. He's talking about the truth of who God is and of who humanity is. This is the truth that Jesus came to testify to. He came basically to tell us and show us, number one, what human beings were intended to be, and number two, who God truly is and what God is like. Now, what God is like is even more specific, because who God truly is, the Jews, of course, believed that Yahweh was God, but they didn't understand Yahweh. They had completely misinterpreted him, and especially the leaders at the time. So we're going to look at these two things. Jesus showed us the truth about what and who we are supposed to be. The first and foremost thing for which we exist is to know God and to live in his love, to know him intimately, personally. So Jesus shows us that. That's how Jesus lived his life. He lived his life in communion with his Father and in love with his Father, doing the will of his Father, not doing his own will, but doing the will of him who sent me. And then, of course, Jesus loved his neighbor. Jesus showed us how we are to love one another. He showed us how we are to love our neighbors, which sometimes translates even to strangers, and sometimes translates even to enemies. So Jesus showed us all that. So Jesus showed us the truth about who human beings are to be. That's the first thing. But the second thing is that Jesus showed us the truth about God. Jesus showed us the truth. So like I said, the Jews knew, I mean, they have this long history. They go back to Abraham, their patriarch. And they know that God called Abraham and he set him apart. And then Abraham, God promised that through Abraham and his seed, all the nations of the world would be blessed. And then Abraham's son Isaac came. And then Isaac's son Jacob or Israel came. And then the tribes of Israel and all the great and wonderful stories of the work of God among these people. So point is, they knew that Yahweh was their God. But the reality is, they didn't know what Yahweh was really like. They missed the most important features of who Yahweh was. And so Jesus comes, and he is the one to bring Yahweh out into the open. Remember what John says in chapter 1, verse 18. No one has ever seen God, but the one and only Son, who is also himself God and is in the closest relationship with the Father, he has brought him out into the open. So that's what Jesus did. In the Old Testament, the most repeated passage in the Old Testament, believe it or not, is from Exodus chapter 34. It's the description that God gives of himself. That is the most repeated passage in the Old Testament. You find it over and over, either stated exactly or partially or alluded to. And I can't remember the number of times, and just last week I sat down and I went through every one of them and marked them, and now I forget how many there were. But there's a lot of them, take my word for it. So Jesus comes to reveal, and Hebrews tells us this. Hebrews tells us that Jesus is the exact representation of God's person. He's the exact representation. Paul tells us in Colossians that he is the image of the invisible God. So you want to see God? You want to know what God is like? People wonder, well, you know, if there is a God, what's he like? Look at Jesus. He's the exact representation. He is the image of the invisible God. And what is the thing that God, as he reveals himself in Exodus 34 and repeats over and over again, and what do we see in the life of Jesus, dominantly in his life? We see through Jesus that God is merciful and gracious, slow to anger, and full of compassion. That's God's self-revelation. That's what we see in the incarnation. Jesus comes and he completely blows everybody's minds because he is merciful and gracious. He blows some people's minds completely, like they can't handle it. No way, there can't be that much graciousness. There can't be that much mercy. We won't accept that. I mean, Jesus was so radical. This past week, Cheryl, in her morning devotion, you know, she wrote out this thing. It was kind of like, you know, would Jesus be welcome at your church? And then she talked about Jesus and just how radical he was. And, you know, so she's reading this thing to me and I'm like, where did you get that? And she said, oh, you know, I'm just writing it. And she does stuff like that sometimes. And I said, give me that thing. I want to post that because it's amazing. But it's basically a statement of the radicalness of the mercy and grace and compassion of Jesus. And this blows everybody's mind. I mean, for some people, for the broken and for the sinful and for the people who feel like and are being told, basically, God hates you and there is no future for you except the flames. This is the greatest news ever. This is the greatest revelation of all time. For the self-righteous, they hate this. No way. This is crazy. I'm righteous. And no, we're good. We don't even need that kind of mercy because we're good ourselves. So that's what Jesus does. He reveals that God is merciful and gracious. He also reveals to us that God is faithful. The God of the Bible is a faithful God. And Jesus is showing by his own life the faithfulness of God because Jesus is coming in fulfillment of the promises God has made. And I've already mentioned one. In you, Abraham, and in your seed, singular, all the people of the earth will be blessed. The blessing for all humanity is coming through your seed, Abraham, through your singular seed. And that seed was Christ, Paul tells us. And so Jesus shows that God is faithful. He keeps his promises. He promised that even though sin entered the world, even though man sided with the devil against God, that God would make a way back. And Jesus is that way back. And so his very presence is showing us the truth that God is faithful. But this whole scene, this whole thing that is leading up to that climactic moment of the crucifixion is also showing us something about God. It's showing us that God is just. Why did Jesus die? Well, there are a number of reasons, but one of the reasons that's often overlooked is Jesus died because of God's justice. You see, because God is just, sin must be punished. God cannot, because of who he is, he cannot let sin go unpunished. He must punish sin. And so Jesus shows us that God is just. But finally, Jesus shows us that God is love. And the depth of his love is seen in Jesus in his suffering for us. This is where the deep, deep love of God is displayed. Because what Jesus is doing is he's taking upon himself the punishment that we deserve. This is the great act of love, that God is making Jesus, who knew no sin, to become the sin offering for us so that we could in turn become the righteousness that God requires in him. And so in this suffering that Jesus is enduring that will climax with those final words, "It is finished, into your hands I commit my spirit," all of this is a display of the love of God. And this is what Paul says in Romans chapter 5, verse 8, isn't it? He says that while we were yet sinners, God demonstrated his own love toward us in that while we were sinners, Christ died for the ungodly. That's the demonstration of God's love. How do we know God loves us? How does anybody know that there really is a God of love? God demonstrated his love toward us in that while we were sinners, while we were enemies, Christ, his beloved son, his one and only son, his unique son, the one who is one with the Father, he died for us. And as Jesus himself said, greater love has no one than this, than to lay down one's life for his friends. And that's what he did. He laid down his life for us. So when Jesus says that he came to testify to the truth, he's talking specifically about this truth of who God is, of who we are intended to be, of who we have become, and of what God has done to fix the problem. And what God has done is he has condescended. He has stepped down from his throne to die for his subjects. What king dies for their subjects? That's how much he loves us. And so that's the truth. And Jesus said, everyone who is of the truth listens to my voice. Everyone who is of the truth, everyone who's interested in truth. You know, there's a lot of truth seekers supposedly out there. The problem is, as somebody pointed out once, most people say they're seeking truth, but they really hope to never find it. They like the journey. If you're really seeking truth, this is it. This is where you'll find it. And if you're really seeking truth, you'll listen to it and heed it. Because Jesus said, everyone who is of the truth, truly, listens to my voice.
For the month of August, Back to Basics Radio is offering a book titled The Powers of Darkness and the People of God by Pastor Brian. Can a Christian become demon-possessed? Is there really an unseen spiritual battle behind large-scale world events and the details of individual lives? If you've ever wondered about the unseen spiritual realm and its influence upon the physical world, then this month's book, The Powers of Darkness and the People of God by Pastor Brian, will answer these very questions. If you want to better understand the spiritual battle that we're involved in as Christians, how to recognize the tactics of the enemy, and how to live a victorious Christian life, you need to get this month's resource from Back to Basics. The book, The Powers of Darkness and the People of God by Pastor Brian, is our gift to say thank you for your donation to Back to Basics. So we encourage you to call us right now at 1-800-733-6443 or visit us online at backtobasicsradio.com. We'd also like to remind you that all of our other resources are waiting for you at backtobasicsradio.com or by calling our request line at 1-800-733-6443. That's 1-800-733-6443. Our desire is to encourage you in your daily walk with God. We'll continue tomorrow with more valuable insights from Pastor Brian as we study together in the Gospel of John. Back to Basics is the preaching and teaching ministry of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California.